Mormon Stories Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation. All donations to Mormon Stories are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at MormonStories.org.
So were you, you mentioned Evergreen Workbooks. Some of my listeners may or may not know that.
Yeah, for the, Evergreen the gay Mormon Stories side of things, yeah.
Is the church's unofficially endorsed support group.
Supported, yeah, I would
for,
say.
I've been told they're financially supported by the church.
Oh.
From a pretty reliable source, at least partly.
Yeah.
But it's sort of a, it's a support group that.
And again, so is North, right? So.
I mean, yeah. But in theory, what I understand is that it's sort of like if you're gay and if you're Mormon and you want to try and marry a woman and make it work, if you're male.
You want to change your sexual identity.
Yeah.
It's very based on change.
They can, what do they provide? Tell us about what Evergreen
does. They provide workbooks.
Did you go to Evergreen? Did you like?
I never would show my face at a conference because I was also that famous Mormon.
So you were closeted.
Completely.
But you, okay.
When I was 17, I started an online group called LDS Teens with SA. And it became this anonymous support group on Yahoo Groups. At the time, that was kind of a big thing.
Yeah.
And I figured there was nothing else. It was always guys saying, you know, it's okay to be gay. It was never like this. For those of us that want to stay in the church or serve a mission or get married to a girl.
Right.
And then I got picked up by a friend of mine who had ties with Evergreen. And so he would sneak me the books and sneak me everything under his name. And I kind of got connected with an intermedium, basically.
And what were you hoping to do?
Change my sexual identity.
So how would Evergreen...
After I went through one book, I just knew that wasn't going to happen.
What would the book tell you to do or how...
It was the same nonsense about, you know, finding your masculinity. Again, finding positive relation, building positive male relationships with guys that are healthy and not sexual. And, you know, learning how to, like, hold one another and cuddle one another, which I thought was so gay and so stupid. Can you just hold me? And that's going to make me not want to have sex with you later on. I mean, then why does the church say you shouldn't be cuddling in bed? You shouldn't spoon before you're married because spooning leads to forking. Let's be honest. And so I felt like that was just so counterproductive for me. And I
did
felt,
you try it for a bit?
I did. I joined a couple of support groups. I came out to a very select few group of people that were either in particular married ones because I figured like they were the safest ones to deal with.
And married gay men Mormon.
Married gay men Mormon. Yes. Two women. And okay. That have kids.
Right.
And had callings that were actively, you know, in good standing with the church, temple worthy. I feel like that was important because if I were to connect with a single man, I worried that lines would be crossed again or that feeling like I had with that missionary companion would kind of come back. And so I did that. I worked through those workbooks. And the funny thing was, is during that time when I was single, I was doing this, I felt more gayer through them because it was constantly on my mind. Because I was constantly trying to analyze why I was reacting the way that I was. And it was in the moments where I was just me that I felt less of it as the big identifier in my life. And it's funny, so I...
So trying to change it amplifies it yourself.
Completely. For me. And I'm not speaking for on behalf of anyone else. Because I believe everyone has their own path to choose. And I respect that 100% wholeheartedly. But for me, yeah. I felt so gayer. I started questioning, well, maybe I am. Maybe I'm effeminate. You know, like maybe I have a lisp when I talk or maybe I have the bent wrist all the time. Like I started thinking things like that. Or maybe I'm not connected with sports yet. I'm thinking I know every stat from Kobe Bryant there is from the beginning of his career. So I mean, not like that validates masculinity, but maybe activities that are masculine. Because they would say, do you find yourself liking the arts more than you like sports? Well, I'm a professional dancer, for crying out loud, you know? So that doesn't make sense because it's my profession, but it's not a pastime. My pastimes were toilet papering my friends' houses and making out girls. So it didn't make a lot of sense to me. I just didn't identify with that. Like, you have an overbearing mother and a distant father. Well, my dad traveled a lot. My mom has an opinion, but on the flip side, my dad's very much of an influence in my life, too.
He probably has opinions, too.
He definitely has opinions, too. And they fight all the time. So it's not like I saw one winning and not the other way. But, so I never felt...
What about all that jacuzzi experience?
Yeah, but that's something that I'd felt prior to that. Like, I'd always been engaged in people and in things and in the body and... As a dancer, we're engaged in that. Like, I can be turned on by a girl or a boy by the way they move their fingertip in a dance movement. And it's like, ugh, that's beautiful. I love you for your ankles. You know what I mean? Like, it's that simple. It's not like, oh, ba-boom, ba-boom. It has nothing to do with that. Like, that to me, like, naked bodies don't turn... That's probably why I didn't have, like, issues. I was dating girls, like, looking at pornography. Because the naked body, like, I almost saw every day. And it was on me every day. And I was lifting people, and we were sweating around each other. And dancers are very physical, affectionate people in a non-sexual way, let alone anything else.
Yeah, and as you're watching it, and you, like, see your hand go along their chest, you're like, wow, I wonder if that's arousing, or I wonder if how they, you know...
Not at all.
If they're like, I wonder if they're having sex, you know, behind the scenes.
To me, it's a different thing, because you're in a different sphere of reality at the time. Again, you're living in that moment, and hopefully the genius of dance is inspiring you in that moment. So for me, I could be motorboating someone, and I'm thinking, how do I connect the axis of my cheekbone to her sternum? Like, I think about...
What's motorboating?
Oh,
that's okay. All right.
Boobs and face shaking. I was saying that. You know, something as sexually aggressive as that. Or even like booty dancing or something at a club. And I'm not thinking about, are parts hitting parts here? I'm thinking about, how can I base my hip ratio in alignment with this? Or I'm hearing the music and I'm trying to move my body in that realm. It's not about trying to get some. Like, dance clubs I never understood, and church dances I never understood, because it was always about finding a mate or getting some that night. And I'm like, I'm seeing colors. I'm not even seeing a person in front of me when I'm dancing half the time. It just doesn't call me out in that sense. So I couldn't relate with any of those workbooks. I couldn't relate with the talks that were given. It bothered me sometimes. I have a little bone to pick with you. This is going to sound so bad. I'm going to say this right
bring
now.
Bring it.
Sometimes the last thing I want to hear is a gay men's chorus.
All right.
You know what? Let's bring some rock music to a gay Mormon story circling the wagons conference.
All right. All right.
Let's do something different, and or let's not make it so show tuney. Like, it's great, and I think, you know, it's going to attract most of the gays. But for me, not my cup of tea. Let's have a softball game afterwards, not to try and realign our masculinity, but let's make fun of ourselves for running with the swishy thing. You know, like, or let's break a nail and cry about it. Like, enjoy who you are. You know, and so I never felt connected with it, but I kept trying. And then finally, I met this girl.
Did you go to a therapist to do actual reparative therapy?
I did. I did try reparative therapy.
What was that like? What did they do?
You know what? The funny thing was, is that they never addressed my homosexual desires. It was always about my relationship with my family.
So very psychodynamic Freudian.
Completely Freud. Yeah. And because of that, I never felt... I mean, I felt like my relationships with my family were better. My communication skills, my boundaries... feeling like I'm not a part of the savior complex or being caught in the middle of things. Like, I did learn a lot of dynamics that have really helped me, you know, but while those things were repaired, I never felt like that was the cause of me being gay. Like, I felt like this is something that I chose in the pre-existence. I felt like this is before birth or at birth, not there was a trigger that happened in my life or I was molested or something else happened that caused any of this. I never felt that. Never had that experience. So, never. No, okay. It didn't work for me. And though I never felt like that was my end all, I felt like, okay, so rather than trying to change me, maybe I just need to change my perspective and learn how to deal with this. So coping mechanisms were what I really worked with. And I found doing that with not many therapists were really, really willing to do that. A lot of them thought it's either reparative therapy. They sold reparative therapy a lot. The church sold reparative therapy a lot.
Are people making money off of that?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Definitely.
Selling hope, basically?
Selling, yeah. I mean, it's a pyramid scheme as far as I'm concerned. You know, and recommend your friends that are going through this too. Okay. I mean, recommend your friends that are in theater and that dance.
So, was there a whole culture around this?
Yeah. Let's be honest. I think I'd have to play on this, but before we get to that culture, because I will explain that.
Okay.
I think to kind of put this in order. This is how things have happened. There is a culture, but I didn't find out about this culture until after things ended with me and this girl. And so I think I need to address that really quickly.
Go ahead. Yeah, take it.
So during this time when there was a really bad tragedy that happened, I mean, of the utmost worth, there was a death between us. And that's as far as I'm allowed to say. I kind of have a blessing from her to talk some details and some that aren't. And I feel like we're just going to hold that sacred to us. But it was debilitating, really debilitating, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, just debilitating. And I became a numb person, and I believe she did too. She was lost, and with all reason, all completely understandable. It also broke a lot of ties that we had with one another through the death of this person that we shared close love with. And because of that, I think the issues with my same-sex attraction issues became this paranoia for her, because someone that was really close to her theoretically through death abandoned her, and she was very adamant, you know, will you abandon me? You know, we would go on a date at a movie theater, and a good-looking couple, straight couple, would walk by us holding hand in hand. And it's actually kind of true. She would look at me, she's like, which one are you looking at? And this whole paranoia thing. Before, and it would be like, so do you think he's cute? It'd be like, yeah, he's kind of cute. And it would be okay, because I'm holding onto my girl's hand, and I love her, and I was dedicated to her, and I was faithful to her. But afterwards, it was like, are you looking at him or her, or both? She's like, wow, I have to worry about everyone being a temptation to you. And it was kind of true. I don't think she could handle it. I don't think at that time, in the trauma that she'd suffered, she could have handled it. And you know what? At that time, honestly, and I very rarely think I've admitted this, but I couldn't handle it either. I think I needed a change. And so we ended things mutually. It was tragic, but we needed to do it. And we both know it. And it's all for the best. She's doing wonderful. She's happily married to a great, great guy. And I'm super happy for her and for her happiness. And we don't talk very often, but we still do talk. And we have a very close kinship with one another. Again, very kindred spirit thing between the two of us. And but I think after that, I think everyone knew about it. We were a public relationship. People loved us together. Our families loved one another. We bent over backwards. We went through this death thing that people thought was going to bring us closer. And the way we met was just beautiful and almost picturesque. And everyone just knew that we were going to be dressed in white soon enough. And when that ended, a part of me having that hope completely died. I thought I lost the love of my life. I really did. I thought I lost my eternal companion. That's a better way to put it.
Looking back now, if you guys had gotten married, do you think you would have just been straight Benji for the rest of your life? I mean, what if it had happened?
I think, I don't know if I would have been straight Benji. I would have been faithful to my wife. I think I could have done it. I think I would have been miserable. And I think she would have been miserable. And sadly, because of the whole idea of having the eternal perspective and all is well, and we might die through this journey and our feet might freeze in cold waters and we might starve from scurvy or whatever, we know that there's the highest grade of the celestial kingdom awaiting us. And
that would have carried you through.
Maybe. I know for a fact I would never have cheated on her.
But right now, are you looking back thinking, wow, I wish we could have done it?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
So let's keep going.
Not in the slightest.
Okay.
It was difficult, but probably the biggest blessing I had had since my mission. More than $100,000+ and more than all these other things. And subsequently, right after that, I decided to buy a house. Because I thought, well, I think it was my way of compensating for not having a girl. I think maybe if I can buy the house that someone will like it and I could immediately move in with a girl, get married quick and, you know, get married and go to temple, this and that. That was my last ditch effort, was buying this house. And unfortunately, through a series of very, very bad events, I lost my life savings. So, and this is, mind you, after working endorsements, working on big TV projects, a lot of money for me anyways, I lost everything. I was in the zero right after I paid for a house that I had a really bad mortgage on. I was going to have to pay it out the butt for a year, but I could refinance because I was a first-time buyer. And anyways, the whole California like crash happened like 2 days after I bought the place. February 8th, I think I bought the place, and it crashed the 12th.
2008?
Yeah. So lost that, was broken up with my girl. I hit rock bottom. I mean, it was pretty bad. And I literally was working now, and I figured, well, I'm not going to be dating girls, so I might as well just start working again and filling in my head.
Not dating girls, why?
Because I felt like the sense of I couldn't access that. Partly because part of it was I'm kind of a pseudo celebrity in the Mormon world, especially the single adult Mormon world. And every time I would go there, I would question if these girls really liked me or liked the idea. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple that I knew for a fact just liked me for the idea. When I thought, wow, this girl's really pretty, and she actually likes me, this is really cool, I'm attracted to her, woohoo, good, hope, possibilities. And then I'd find out that I would hear her in a phone call talking to a friend of mine who had said she was just talking about how she can't wait to have the red carpet wedding and have E film it. And I'm like, and inviting Brad and Angelina to the wedding. And I'm like, I'm a dancer. Like, I still drive the same crappy car that I drove before. I still do. Like, I'm not a car person. So, I mean, that's a gay thing about me, too. But, no, gays are car people. What am I talking about? They all have their little convertibles and all that. I'm not that kind of gay, I guess. But, I digress. But that after that happened, I hit rock bottom. I felt really vulnerable and weak. And it was shortly thereafter that I just decided to work a lot. I had to save up money to pay for this mortgage. I didn't have a savings. I was screwed. I mean, I was really in a bad place. And I lost the two roommates that were going to help sublease in a room and help pay for this mortgage. They left. One was getting married and in the church, and the other one just decided to move to Hollywood, and I just couldn't do it. Like, I was literally maybe home 4 days out of the month, and it was depressing as all hell because I was always on the road. So I couldn't date a girl even for that reason, just because I was so busy, and lack of trust, and the fact that I didn't want to date girls. I was so burned by doing everything right, John, and always choosing the right, and feeling like I would be blessed for it. And I guess I said, you know, it's me being blessed for winning a TV show. Like, I didn't sell my soul, you know, like, I'm still doing the right thing, but all is going to hell. And I'm thinking, am I Job? Then again, I was a Book of Mormon person more than anything. So when I read the Book of Mormon, like, you prospered in the land if you were righteous. The Book of Mormon's very cut and dry about that. I mean, there was very rarely a time when they talked about any discussions or dissensions or apostasies or destruction of the land of the Lamanites to destroy them when they were doing good. And I felt like I was living like those good Nephites in the earlier parts of the Book of Mormon. And yet, I was losing everything, and I had the best intentions behind it. And so, on my travels, I ended up meeting a boy that I'd known for a very long time, and I knew that he didn't go on his mission. And I found out through the grapevine that day, it was because that he was possibly gay, but decided to stay in the church. And I thought, that's really admirable. Maybe I'll come out to somebody for the first time. Lo and behold, we were all at dinner after this big dance gig, and we kind of met up, and there was like this weird flirtatious vibe between us. But again, I'm thinking we're friends, but no. And we kind of just grew crazy of each other. He was still active. I was still active. And 6 months later of just this flirting back and forth, we decided to start kind of a relationship. I told my bishop about it. First thing I did, I hadn't even kissed him yet. And we were going to have a non-sexual Mormon, gay, homosexual, active Mormon relationship. Temple-worthy relationship.
Sweet.
Right? So alternative.
Awesome.
Yeah. And so, you know, at the time, there was these like pro-gay things about changing. I hated that. It didn't work for me. There are these, you're already married and dealing with it. I didn't resonate with that. It didn't connect with me. Or they're the affirmation side of things. They're like, it's okay to be gay. Let's change the face of the church rather than having them change us and destroying us in the process and us jumping off a bridge or putting a gun to our heads.
What did you think of that?
I thought they were extremists and I was scared of them at the time. I think they're awesome now for the most part, you know. But, you know, again, sometimes we have to have these civil rights marches. Sometimes we have to chain ourselves up to post to get things to be heard. And I get that now, but I didn't get that then. So I was afraid of affirmation, which is, for those of us that don't know, sure. It's like this gay and lesbian Mormon alliance and pro-gay.
And again, the evergreen stuff, you were just didn't think it was
I thought work. It was a bunch of BS.
Okay.
And I didn't know anybody that actually got anything from it, other than some people found a newly pronounced sense of like masculinity within themselves, and they found that that was really good. So I like this idea of like, maybe I need to have my own plan of salvation here. And I'm really in love with this guy and he loves me and we're good about it. We went to church together. like we would give each other back rubs in sacrament. But a lot of guys did that were single in singles wards. You know, they were like, oh, brother, it's like, let me put your arm around you. There'd be times where we'd have like our scriptures right here and his thigh was right there. And we were like holding pinkies in sacrament meeting, you know. But I never felt bad because I never felt like I was committing a sin. You know, the sin was, it's not a sin to be gay. And that was still very pronounced in the church at the time. Like, it's not a sin to be gay. It's a sin to have, you know, gay sexual relations in and out of a marriage. Now, obviously, you couldn't get married. So I'm thinking, well, maybe we'll just be friends forever, special boyfriends forever. And that was my only hope at the time. And it was funny because, you know, there would be moments where we would get really tempted and almost cross the line. And we'd feel guilty. And I would sleep on the floor that night. We'd slept in the same bed a lot of the times. But we had a very loving relationship for the most part. It was chaotic because there was always this, you know, one step closer, you're now a relationship that's not protected and the spirit won't be there. But we had spiritual moments together. We loved going to church together.
Temple?
He wasn't temple worthy.
Okay.
Or he wasn't endowed, rather.
Okay.
But he was taking the sacrament, you know, and so it was good for the most part. And then to fast forward, I told my bishop, you know, I said, what about kissing? And he even told me a story, I guess, about how one of the prophets was dying in a bed and kissed. I forget this. I think it was Ezra Taft Benson or one of the older apostles, or that prophets that was saying the story. But he saw one prophet kiss another prophet on the lips, and he said it was beautiful. He said he saw that it was the pure meaning of charity, and so he was re-narrating this story. My bishop actually at the time, and I've had some really kick butt bishops. They're awesome, and he told me, he's like, Benji, when you kiss this kid, do you feel love or lust? And at the time, we'd only been like pecking, you know. It was just like, I adore the poop out of you. You're awesome, you know. And I felt like it was good. I could honestly tell him that it was not from a lustful perspective. And then it's playing by fire. And it really is living in that tempting zone. We're spooning, we're cuddling, and we're on our own. Doors are closed. And it's like the whole anti-BYU curfew thing going on. And he didn't go to BYU at the time, but so it was one of those things where we played with fire a little bit. There were moments where we pushed the boundaries, and I felt like there were some things that I needed to do that were met for repentance and confessing to a bishop. And that's all I feel. I'll indulge that much. But so I told the bishop about that, and I felt bad, and I ended up breaking things off after 18 months of off and on loving each other. It was a long time, ish, maybe a little less than that.
So we're into 2010 by now?
Yeah. No, because 2008 was when...
Okay. 2009?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it was 2009 when we ended, July of 2009.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, my parents knew at the end of our relationship. I came out to my family. But think about how easy it is to come out to your family when you're like, guess what? I'm dealing with the gay thing. But I'm fighting it. I have a temple recommend. It is the easiest thing to come out to your parents and say, I'm dealing with this, but I'm fighting it. You right, know, it's right. Like this great consolation prize for all of them. And I never had to just say, no, I'm this, you know. And so I came out to a couple people, select few, and they were really cool with it for the most part. My mom cried because she's like, I just wish you wouldn't have been so quiet about this for so long. We had no idea.
How was Lacey?
Lacey was the first person I told, second person I told. And she didn't care. She's like, I love you either way. I didn't think so. I didn't believe that. I thought you truly were into like your fiancés and your girlfriends. And I'm like, I was, but I'm more gay than not. And so pick a team, you know. And she was cool with it. She was like, that's kind of cool. I've always wanted a gay brother, so let's enjoy this. I'm like, don't think for one thing that we're gonna get like mani pedis together or anything like that. It ain't changing, but I love her. And yeah, so that was it. I mean, that was about it. That was the extent. And when we broke up, I didn't have to go through a repentance process even after confessing things that happened. But I felt unworthy to take the sacrament. My bishop's like, no, you can take the sacrament. I'm like, nope. Coming from like the cleanest of cleanest track records, that white handbook, and thinking that all I have to do is just take the sacrament. Nope. Didn't think so. I was too hard on myself. That perfectionistic side, even though it's very anti-atonement and very anti-faith in the atonement of Christ, I still felt unworthy. Personally, I did not feel like I was ready to take the sacrament. And I remember continuing on that path for a while, and off and on, I felt like I crossed the line with other people that I'd met, but I was always going to church, never failed. And the very first time I was on a business trip and I went to a sacrament meeting, and I remember literally the whole ward. It was at a dance competition in a very big Mormon community outside of Utah, actually. And like half the dance competition was there that day. And I'm sitting in the overflow in the back. And I remember that sacrament tray was passed and I had to deny it. Everybody was looking at me. This isn't like what I was feeling or an anxiety thing. Like all the kids were trying to see, you know,
if you were worthy to take the sacrament.
If I was worthy to take the sacrament, if they could look up to me or not. And I remember that being such a humbling experience. And I just bowed my head and just cried. I mean, I couldn't, I just wept the whole time.
And you didn't take it?
No. He would know. I knew. In the end, I've had a lot of people judge me, a lot of Mormons judge me. And I remember actually one girl that day at the end of that competition, you know, we sign autographs and we take pictures of the kids and it's really fun. And one mother came up to me and she grabbed my hand and she's like, "I am so proud of you for your example." She's like, "I saw you at church today." And she's like, "I just thought that was really admirable." And I'm like, "That's awesome." But on the flip side, 2 people later, they would have me take, I was the only member of the church in this tour of dancers, and yet they refused to take a picture with me.
The Mormons.
Grabbed her daughter, "You will not take a picture with him," and we walked away.
Because she knew you hadn't taken the sacrament.
Yeah. So it's kind of a funny, again, that 50-50 balance.
And this is because you had messed around with some of your relationships.
Yeah, and I felt personally more guilty for that, even though I'd already confessed all this stuff. Like, it wasn't that I was holding on to sins and hadn't confessed them. I had a very great open dialogue with all of my bishops, always. I've never lied to my bishops, been very upfront.
But you didn't do anything that would get you excommunicated?
No.
Okay.
But I felt like maybe I'm already on the road to apostasy.
Just petting stuff.
Yeah. And I never had sex, or I didn't go that far. And, yeah. And then, fast forward, and I felt like I was being really worthy again. I felt like I was really living my life well. I felt like I could start taking the sacrament again, but I wasn't ready to go back to the temple. And so I started taking the sacrament again, and I got a calling, and it was awesome, and I was traveling a lot. I have permission to share a story from an ex of mine, and I think this is going to tie into the end of this Mormon story of mine. And I think it's important to talk about, if that's okay.
You talked about a period of time where you were just alone in your house.
That's coming up.
Okay, I want to make sure we don't miss that.
Yes, it's going to get into that. Long story short, through literally miraculous circumstances and reasons, I believe, and I truly believe that, things that I can't explain. I like to call it supernatural in that sense. When I just can't explain it, it's not how the world works. But I met a boy, and I'd been praying, "Lord, do I kill myself now that I'm worthy again? Do I..."
Because then in your twisted logic, you'd be worthy to die?
Yeah. Is this my altar? You know, am I going to be putting myself up to sacrifice that because in the future I know that it's not going to work out? Or because I know I'll get so depressed that I'm probably going to end up just pulling the trigger anyways. I prayed every day that I was worthy on a flight, because I fly so much, at least twice a week. I prayed that the plane would crash while I was worthy. Every day on my mission, I prayed that I would die on my mission. When I had that accident at my hospital, I'm thinking, "Woohoo! I'm going in a couple of days." I had internal bleeding. I'm like, "Here we go. Here's my ticket."
Because you wanted to die worthily.
I wanted to die I wanted to be a Nephi. Yeah. I wanted a Lamanite bride. I wanted to be healed of the temptations and weaknesses that I felt I had accepted in this life. And knowing me, trying to be that person that's going to prove every wrong, like I believe, like in the pre-existence, like who wants to deal with this trial? Who wants to deal with the worst one? Who wants to deal with being gay? And I'm like, "I'll do it. I'll prove you wrong." Like, I believe that my spirit would probably be that kind of person. I will do it. I'll deal with this gay thing. And I'll accept my parents who were dancers. You know what I mean? Like, I really thought that. And so I just figured maybe I was not strong enough, but I would not leave the church and I will not live a gay lifestyle like that. And so I prayed, "Lord, let me find the right girl, kill me, or let me find the right boy where I won't cross the line with this." And I found the right boy. I, I, I thought, I can, since I'll still say this, we're not even together or anything, but I found the love of my life. And the way we met, if I were to tell you the stats, I'm not even going to embellish in it because we don't have a lot of time. I know that. We got to get to some other deeper points. It was divine. It was divine. And beyond divine. And I just knew Heavenly Father was giving me a chance. Like, that's what I believed. Like, I found someone who had, I had met him theoretically through a baptism experience. I started a non-for-profit charity. We felt inspired to visit this poor family in Mexico and just give them a couple of shirts and some clothes. And they had never seen missionaries in this area. It was a really bad area of northern Mexico. And he was inspired that next day to contact this woman in an area he had never tracked in before. They were all baptized. He didn't know about me at the time. But I heard that there was a gay missionary out there through an old friend of mine that knew. It's a long story, but in the end, I became his friend. Through Facebook, he's like, through the grapevine, I heard that you're a gay Mormon, but you're staying in the church and you're fighting it. Can you help me out at all? I just got home from my mission last week. I'm like, sure. I gave him a couple of links. Some of these didn't work for me, but they might work for you. Good luck. No pictures were posted yet. Well, a couple days later, you know, when you get like little feeds and pictures and people post things. So I see his pictures and I'm like, oh my gosh, he's so cute. He's so dang cute. Like, perfect type for me, at least. And, super hot, like super hot. And I'm clicking through his pictures, like, drooling a little bit. And then, this picture comes by of his mission pictures. And there he is with that family. Date on the picture the day after. I had a picture with the exact same group of people the day before. And I just felt it. I knew it was divine. Like, oh my gosh, I told him this. I didn't think maybe we were supposed to be together, but maybe good friends. And one thing led to another. I visited him. He lived out here in Utah. And we fell hard for each other. And I felt like when I was 21 getting home from my mission, I had nobody to talk to. I had nobody to protect me. And to be like, I've gone through this for a couple years now. I have some worn out Doc Martin shoes. I know what it's like. I'm going to help you through the ropes. And I felt like in a weird sort of way, I was helping my 21-year-old self. It was redemption. I felt like I could be a missionary again in a weird sort of way. And we fell for each other hard. And we didn't really ever cross lines. Nothing that was needed to ever be confessed. Like, we were really good. Slept in the same bed. Spent holidays together. Traveled a little bit together. And it was just pure, innocent love. And he had a temple recommend. And I was working on getting mine back and feeling like I was ready to go back eventually. And I made a promise to him and to God that I would never do anything that would jeopardize him losing his temple recommend. And I stuck with that. And in fact, the end of our relationship was because I was going to stick with it. And it got to a point where I felt like he might have needed to sow his wild oats. And I couldn't be that person, even though I had already kind of done that. And I couldn't go that route.
Because you loved him so much?
I loved him so much. And I, not going to be a sissy and cry. I loved him so much. And, I couldn't do that to him. I couldn't do that to myself. I would hate myself. And I knew if I were to do that then, that the relationship would end. I felt like it was divinely given, kind of like So You Think You Can Dance. Had I crossed that line, I would have lost everything or not deserved it. Parallel, exact parallel story. And I was faced with the same exact dilemma, except this time this was beyond pure love. And yeah, so I ended things. And I felt like, you know, I need to get back to a place where I'm in the temple and I feel a little conflicted having a boyfriend doing that. And you've made me happier than I've ever been my whole life. But I know that in order for us to survive, maybe we have to go through these trials. I need to get in a better place. I actually, from that moment, had this goal, and this is what's going to get me to that whole isolation thing. I made it a goal that I'm going to go back to the temple. And the day that I do and feel right about it, and feel great about being in the church, I'm going to find my answer the day I walk into the temple and pray what to do. Do I marry a woman or do I stay celibate? Because that's all that I could figure as being my options at the time. I wasn't going to kill myself at the time. I was a little bit more positive at that moment. And that was going to be it. And I encouraged him to do the same. So that's where we separate. Now we're getting into 2010s, 2011s. Not 2011s yet, but almost. I confessed everything to my bishop again. He's like, you're fine. Go to the temple, Benji.
So you're
like,
keeping yourself out of the temple.
Keeping myself out because I didn't feel a spiritual confirmation that it was right. I didn't.
You were taking this really seriously.
As a seizure. As serious as a seizure. That's a quote from a gay-themed movie called Latter Days about a gay Mormon. It's a quote from it, sorry. Anyways, yeah, serious as a seizure. Yeah, because I was true blue, still to that day, you know, and I might have fallen from grace. I might have dropped my pants on TV and fooled around with a couple of boys, but I was a true blue believing Mormon all the way, of the deepest kind. And so I kept going back to the bishop feeling like, I'm not ready for this. I don't know what to do. I was in a new singles when I moved, and I figured maybe I can start fresh. Felt nothing. Hated going to church. Hated it. Felt that I'm now I'm getting to like, what's the rebellious age that one of the prophets said, like you're in rebel cause if you're not married by the time you're like 26.
Oh yeah, menace to society.
Menace to society. Yeah. I was hitting menace to society age. All of my closest friends had already, like my two best male friends, like my two best male LDS friends that there are, they're cool with this. They know what I'm doing. This Ricky and Bear. His name's not really Bear, but we call him that. Two best friends in the world. We put our papers in together at the same time in the mission. I came out to them. One of the first people that I told about my struggles. They knew about my boyfriends. We all hung out. They were cool with it as long as I didn't screw up. They were cool with it. They said, we beat you up if you did. So it was cool. And they even said, you know, Benji, we're going to give you a get out of jail free. We'll pray for you. Just go have sex with a girl. It'll totally change you.
Fix you.
Say what?
It'll fix you.
It'll fix me. It'll fix me right up. I used to laugh at them for that. They used to joke about that. But I went through this process. I hated going to church. I started falling deeply into like a deep state of depression. And I felt uneasy at church. Every time I walked in, my skin crawled. I felt like everybody was looking at me. Everybody knew. A sense of paranoia kind of grew in. I felt guilt because I was looking at boys now a lot more. Like I would walk in, I'm like, who are the cool single hot guys today? What am I thinking? Like I gave up that already, you know, and it was just be constant guilt. And I'm like, ah, you know, this is really, really hard. And then I'm thinking about it. Maybe I need to go to a family ward. So my end of my single adult ward life was I told the bishop, I need to find some restitution. I think I have some underlying issues with the church, and I don't know how to deal with them. At the time, I also Prop 8, you know, it kind of happened and went through. And I did an independent film where I played a gay man in a musical comedy, really low budget indie film called Leading Ladies. And I play that one gay person that I don't think I am, which is kind of funny. And what's funny is the day I dropped my pants, I was casted from that day because that girl's like, oh, he could play a great gay guy. And so anyways, kind of funny. But I was going around all these gay film festivals. It was actually really fun. And I got to promote a film and they were asking me, you know, we read in your Wikipedia that you're a Mormon. How do you feel about that, playing a gay guy? And you know, what's funny is I'm around all these great, progressively intelligent gay people at these festivals. And I'm seeing they're not all wearing leather. You know, they're not whipping each other. They're not all in drag. And even if they are, they're really cool. They're nice, actually. They can hold a conversation. They're intellectuals. They're college graduates. They're family men. They're partnered. And I'm thinking, these people are great. I had a really interesting exposure because I had gay dancer friends, but most gay dancer friends, they're sluts. I mean, that's what they call themselves, and they don't care. They like it. They like the attention. Sorry if that's a little too heavy of a word, but anyways,
we're
apologize.
Good. We're good.
Okay. If you've listened this far, I guess it's not a big deal, but and they're cool with it. They own up to it. So seeing these people in a different light kind of changed my perspective on the gay culture, on gay lifestyle. At that time, I was very much at peace with, if you decide to leave the church, I get it. I respect it. I will never do this. That's what I was thinking.
You were telling other people this.
Yes. And go at peace. And you know what? Find your peace. And I believe that you won't be held accountable. And I believe if you live your life right, I truly had a testimony at that time that some people were meant to not be in the church.
Yeah.
I did believe that.
When you see a certain group of people suffering so badly, you realize that it's either leaving the church or death.
Yeah.
Better that they leave.
It really is. Yeah. It really is. And you know, it's funny, you know, man, like talking about having joy in this earth, and I always found this really weird imbalance sometimes where people are like, you know, you desire to have great happiness on this earth and eternal happiness in the next life. But it's like, what about just eternal happiness in the next life, but nothing on this earth? That's difficult. You know, Job at least got his recompense in this life.
You're talking about the request of the church to have someone be celibate for their entire life.
Yeah.
And to never know love and true intimacy.
Yeah. Yeah. Because at that point, they were saying, do not get married to cure yourself.
Yeah.
That was actually finally said, which I was like, all right, go church, progression, good job.
Right, right.
So to finish this out, I asked for my bishop. I'm like, I need to find restitution. Could I please have I asked for a disciplinary council. I'm like, I think I need a tribunal. I think I need to voice my opinion, not to just one man who loves me so much. I think sometimes young
people... You weren't believing that he had forgiven you.
I wasn't.
This is very symptomatic of the scrupulosity, which my listeners will have heard about before.
Yeah.
You doubt your worthiness.
I doubt it.
Pathologically.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It became manic. I mean, it really did. And I was lashing myself, you know, and I thought that was my own penance. Like, this is the way I can prove my worthiness. But I'd always had those moments of peace in the past when I was suffering through challenges, even with my parents. We would kneel down and pray all together, and there would always be that light at the end of the tunnel, and I hadn't felt that in a very long time. And I'm thinking, did I screw this up? What did I do wrong now? And I never felt that restitution. And so my bishop's like, I don't think I would be willing to do a bishopric level thing. I'm like, then I'm going to ask the stake president. And I did. And so I got it. And I was really excited about it, actually. I felt at peace, like this was the right decision, that maybe I'll find restitution in all of this. And maybe if I can start with a clean slate, whatever it may be, whether it's excommunication, disfellowshipment, a small minor, whatever, repentance process, whatever it is, I'm willing. And I was almost hoping that I would get excommunicated. Like, I didn't embellish on details, but I was graphic to the account because I wanted them to know the severity of all the things that I'd done.
You wanted to clean the slate.
Yeah, even though I confessed to all of it already. And so when I told my stake president this before that process happens, he's like, well, we'll have it. You know, we'll have it. You need to have this for yourself. And I think it'd be good for you. I think that's a great way. My stake president, probably one of the best examples of a Mormon man I've ever met in my life. To this day, I love him to death. And he said, he's a psychologist too. It's kind of cool. He's like, yeah, I think you need some closure. Let's find some restitution, Benj. He's like, you need at least something. And I'm thinking excommunication. He's like, it's not going to happen, but something will happen, you know? And I remember saying my whole story in front of these guys. And it was really weird because this is the first time, other than with a bishop or a stake president, that I'm talking to people that might have seen me on a TV show. And sadly enough, when they were walking in, one of them was like, who was a gay father. He told me he was gay afterwards. Told me afterwards. He's like, I'm so gay. You can totally do it. Not a big deal. It's really tough. And I've messed up before in the past. But, you know, my second wife's wonderful. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. I don't want to deal with that. How many lives do I have to destroy? Or breakups do I have to have? Or children do I have to desert? You know, I don't want to do that. And I'm thinking, that just seems really unhealthy. But I guess he repents and he's on the right path. Good for you. I wish you well. So I'm going to quote that from Circling the Wagons book intro. So I ended up going through it. They ended up, it was great. The last thing they said, because, you know, one side's representing the church, one side's defending you. And all of them were like, we just really admire that you're doing this. It's really hard to be a male amongst males talking about this. Like, that's a very awkward situation. Thank you for your candidness and talking about all this and your desire to repent. The other half, there was only one guy, one idiot in the whole group. One idiot in the whole group. He looked at me. He's like, what do you think about Prop 8? And I said two things to him. I said two things. One, it has nothing to do with my repentance process right now. And I said, and two, I think the church is absolutely wrong. And he looked at me like, and you saw like maybe half the room like scoot their chairs back a little bit. And I then finished by saying, I believe I've seen people that have left this church. I've seen people that have killed themselves. And I would much rather see two gay men or two women actually living in a society where it's okay to be partnered rather than hooking up in bathroom stalls, cheating on their wives or cheating on their husbands. And, you know, not having to just have drug-induced dungeon gay sex. Right? There's secret gay sex societies at BYU. I know for a fact. I've met people there that have tried to get me to go. My first dance coach died of AIDS and he contracted it at BYU. Married, in the temple, three kids. So there are secret societies, even as the Book of Mormon paints, because society does not accept unions of man and woman, of man and man, or woman and woman. And I believe if they were, if we were to be raised, if younger gay generation was to be raised in a time where this is okay, maybe they would be more geared towards having a monogamous relationship or a good union, whatever it may be. And I felt like, yes, this is choosing the lesser of two evils. Those that are not against us are with us. Christ said it many times. And I think that that is something we need to look into. And some of them are like, okay. I said, but that does not affect my desire to be in this church. Not at all. I sustain my leaders when I'm worthy. So give me my penance, whatever I have to do. Let's do this. And so I walked out literally 30 minutes later. I'm thinking, here I get X'd. I'm going to get X'd. I'm going to wait 3 years, but let's do it. Here it comes 3 years. And they said, Benj, wait a year. Don't take the sacrament. It's like, I guess it's like a disfellowshipment, right? And some disfellowshipments, I guess, are for 18 months. Mine was for a year. And they said, just do that. You'll be fine. And they wished me well, and a lot of them bore testimony, and they were all crying. It was a good thing. It was a very beautiful, cleansing, cathartic experience. Excuse me. And I thought it was wonderful. I thought it was absolutely wonderful. So I had a year now. So I decided I'm going to move out of the single ward. I don't want to see single boys. I don't want to see temptation. I will not have the internet in my apartment. I will remove.
This has every signs of not ending well if it is carried to its ultimate
it's an extreme.
Conclusion.
Yeah, you know exactly where this is going. So for a year.
Withdrawing, right?
Sorry?
Withdrawing.
Completely withdrawing. Repressing in a proactive, physical, metaphysical way. Very weird. Okay, so, I had to breathe for a second. This is where things get really weird, and it's a little bit more fresh, so it gets a little bit more passionate with me. That whole year, I was a good boy. I was. And I still felt weird, because I felt like the Spirit immediately come back to my life. I felt great studying the Scriptures. I figured, okay, I need to be proactive. So I would go to dance, I would teach, I would travel, I'd come home. And I got really hooked on Mormon Stories podcast. And I thought you were a stud because, like, this is an active Mormon dude and he's raising the issues and he's cool with the gays. And I'm like, that is the kind of Mormon I want to be. But, you know, gay, but whatever. So I'm like, this is awesome. And so I got really attracted to that. I got attracted to a lot of deep doctrinal studies, but they never deviated me from leaving the church. And I want to say something really quick to people that are watching and listening.
You pay attention.
I'm defending my friend John DeLynn right now. He is an effing godsend. I really believe what you are doing. Now I'm crying again. I want to thank you, dude, because I've never felt such depression and isolation because I felt like I had to go through this. And some of my only friends were listening to you and your interviewers and the people that are being interviewed. And hearing people that may have doubted, like I never doubted, you know, but I loved hearing their stories of their trials because I felt like maybe I'm not alone in this, that we all have these weird individual plans of salvation and life is unique and it's rich and maybe some things are not understood yet in the church and there is no real sense of infallible servitude and that's okay. And I found so much peace in that as a Mormon, as an active Mormon. I felt peace listening to Mormon Stories, and it probably saved me from killing myself. Theoretically, it could have been a possibility, or doing harm, or acting out sexually, aggressively. It saved me from a lot of heartache, and it was a godsend. It is. So anyone that wants to hate, I will flip you off. You can't see it, but I'm flipping you off right now, because you don't understand how important something like this is for everyone in the world of Mormonism. Wherever they may be within it. Back to it. Sorry. Anyways.
I'll pay you later.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm totally endorsed. I support
Thank
this.
Thank you. Thank you, Benji.
Yeah. Love you, man. And, you know, it's no homo. But what I did was I started studying a lot. And I actually became really savvy in the Scriptures. And I became this apologist, though. Like, I started being very apologetic. Like, I would hear the people that were, like, anti or ex-Mormons, and I would be like, okay, I'm going to find reason and logic behind that and find spiritual answers and things that the prophets of New have said. And my biggest explanation was, I'm following my prophet now. Like, that's almost always the biggest excuse that we can use.
Forget what Joseph did. I'm following my prophet.
Yeah, forget what Brigham said. Forget about the fact that he mentioned Adam God theory, 1600 times or whatever, in the time that before he died, and all of his written up journals and this and that. And how he said, you know, if anyone that doesn't follow that, they're following an apostate church. Like, that seems pretty strong, that strong words, but I thought, you know what though, times change, people change. You know, I don't understand why the black priesthood had to get it right near the civil rights movement, but that's awesome and cool beans, whatever. You know, looking at the stone that's rolling, this is the only Mormon movement that's actually really working, and I believe in the Book of Mormon. So I thought, okay, this is the only thing that's actually carrying the torch of original Joseph Smith Mormonism that's actually growing. Really. You know, the Community of Christ, but they changed their name. They collated with the Christian Coalition. They changed things as using the Book of Mormon as more of a reference to two scriptures to help the Bible rather than a separate standard work of its own. And I looked at that as a sign of, oh. And they accepted gays, so I'm like, and women priesthood. So I'm like, in Spanish it's called sacerdocio. We called it the mujerdocio, and it's kind of funny, which is like women priesthood, right? Priestesshood, I guess, would be the word. And I just thought, this is the only place that's where it's working, you know? There's no more big love, so obviously the fundamentalist movement's not really working out either, even there's quite a few that are still around. This is the stone that's rolling. And so this is the true church. I preached about it. I felt good when I preached about the restoration. I never felt like it was in doubt. I believed in the words of the scriptures. I loved it all. And so I became this big apologetic Mormon, without voicing my opinion to anybody, because I was locked in an apartment with two little doggies that I absolutely love, and they would sit there as I'm like discussing things with a French bulldog and a wiener dog, and I'm talking about these things, and I became like a uber nerd with all this stuff, right? And and then I moved into this family ward. I would go to church. My bishop, he's also a psychologist. I was so blessed, I swear. And the first thing he told me, like, I hadn't talked to him in a very long time. The only thing was like, listen, I'm disfellowshipped. Please don't call me anything. I know you know about that because there's like a little warning that they put a little asterisk on your membership records to let them know that something's happened with church discipline, right? But he said, I just want to talk to you about that. So I didn't go into the details, but I told him what had happened. I told him where I'm going. And I never really got to speak with him. They're so busy, you know. And I traveled so much, it didn't really matter. I was maybe there maybe once a month, if that. Usually once or twice every 3 months. So I lost a lot of contact, but I would just send him emails every now and then saying, I'm doing good. See ya. I'll see you in a year. See you in 9 months. See you in 6 months. See you in 3 months. So 3 months is hitting before I hit that year mark. I'm depressed as all hell, but I do see a light at the end of the tunnel. And what was brilliant about all of this was I'm ready to go into the bishop's office and say, I'm so good. I'm so ready to do this. I'm so ready to find answers. And my bishop hit me with this question that rocked my world. He says, Benj, do you feel like you're worthy to receive answers? I'm like, yeah. Do you feel like the Spirit speaks to you now? Yes. Are you living your life worthily to be a member, an active member, to hold a calling to go to the temple? I said, yes, other than the fact that I haven't paid my full year of waiting. Yes, completely, wholeheartedly. And he's like, okay, then why don't you just get your answer now? Why do you have to go into the temple to receive this answer? Like, why did you say, I said, because the temple is always a goal. Like, the temple is something that we look to as members to, like, reach for something higher, aspire for something higher. That was like an old EFY theme for years ago. And I always remembered that. And so I thought, you know, what more of a sacred place can I be in? He's like, and he told me Joseph didn't have his, he had a garden. He was on branches and leaves. And I thought to myself, okay, that's kind of true.
What was he trying to do?
In the end, I said, well, what are you trying to get at? Yeah, like, what are you trying to say? Are you just trying to say that I need to figure out maybe exactly how I'm going to go about this path, if I'm going to try and find a wife, if I'm going to go for the celibate route, or like a gay companion that will never have sex with me, maybe we'll live and sleep in separate rooms or something? Like, he's like, you need to think about all those things and maybe kind of have an idea before you get back in full standings in the church. And he's like, the reason why, he's like, I don't want to sign off on a temple recommend for you to lose it in the month.
Because you go to the temple and you don't get the answer you want, or...
And maybe I'm stuck in limbo again and I get depressed and maybe I make a stupid mistake.
He was seeing the ending.
Oh, he knew it. And he
had revelation.
I think so. And maybe it was just the fact that he's a smart man and he has worked with gay people before in his studies. He even said, you know, Benji, I would definitely right now. And he's like, I know you can choose whatever you want. You attracted to girls at all? Like the same question. That's a good sign that you're attracted to some girls. And I'm like, no, it's not. We got into this big fight about it. And I'm like, listen, you work with like crazy people at a loony bin. I may be a little crazy, but I've worked with a lot of gay people and I know a lot of the terminologies. I've read every book there is about it. And I'm telling you right now that to try and and like date girls right now is probably going to be the most catastrophic thing that I can deal with. Unless God himself tells me this, I can't do it right now. I just can't. But I don't mind trying to find peace. I just need to know that a confirmation of peace and solace being in the church and finding happiness in serving in the church will be enough. Gordon Hinckley said that every member should have a responsibility of calling a friend and this and that. So I believe in that. And so he's like, okay. He's like, that's cool. He's like, well, just start praying about it now. But he's like, I'm going to recommend to you that in 7 years, if you get married to a wife, your marriage is going to be over. I'm like, talk about instilling like good faith in me. And so he was really trying to push the whole celibacy thing. And I'm like, well, do you believe that I should be celibate for the rest of my life? Is man meant to be made alone in this life? Anyone that's ever been to the temple know what that means. And, you know, like, it's to me, it was just like, no, we're supposed to have that help me. We're, you know, pull my rib out, make somebody. I believed in that. You know, I believed that the happiest moments of my life were when I was with that boy. Easily. And on my mission with a male companion, that's kind of ironic. And serving people and being able to be active in my church. So I'm thinking maybe I need to rethink this whole gay companion thing, but I don't know anyone that'd be willing to do it without being physical. I was thinking maybe I can castrate myself and maybe I can like take reverse hormonal pills. I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I was literally thinking.
This is psychologically intense.
Super intense. I am combusting without even knowing it yet. Yeah, at this point
this is imploding.
This is a self-implosion right here, completely. Yeah. And I didn't realize it though.
Yeah.
But I think my bishop realized it, and he's like, Benj, I think you need to calm down, don't stress that out, find your answers, but in the meantime maybe it'd be really nice if you kind of reached out to some of your gay Mormon friends. And I'm like, what does that mean? I have a lot of gay Mormon friends, we're all trying to fight it. No, he's like, I mean, maybe find some sense of companionship with them.
This is an inspired bishop. Like,
totally.
Like, this is, I mean, you could just see a bishop that wasn't really tuned in. We're going to do three more months.
You can fight this. Yeah.
3 more months.
You
you're almost there.
It. Yeah.
Let's get you to the temple.
Get your calling.
You'll have the experience.
I got a hot daughter. Yeah. You know, you hear those things, right?
Right?
Yeah.
And this guy
no.
just saw, he saw the future.
He rocked my world. And he told me, he said this. And this is really, this was kind of like epic for me when he said it. He's like, yeah, I think you need to maybe go find some physical, like, obviously not breaking the commandments, but you need to find a way to get the physical needs met. And I'm thinking, and I literally hit my fist on the table and I'm like, you're not inspired. I was angry. I'm like, you're telling me to go back to the path that caused me to go through this 9 months of hell. I will never do this again. I will break. I said, how dare you tell me to do this? You're playing with somebody's spirit, life, and eternal. Like, I was angry. I was offended. I feel so bad now saying that, but I was so angry. And I told him that. I said,
well, I'm just thinking of the believer side of me saying, what the hell is this bishop doing?
Yeah.
Like, you're almost there. You're almost at the finish line, and he's freaking derailing you.
Yeah.
But, from righteousness.
Right, right. It's
that's insane. What the believer in me is saying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, completely. That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, you're weird. I thought to myself? I said, you're a learned man. That's what I'm thinking in my head. I said, you're a psychologist that's basing things off, you know, some old 1976 pre-Spitzer.
Spitzer,
thank you. Pre-Spitzer report and is saying for me to just, you know, kind of throw in the towel. He basically said to throw in the towel without saying it. I was kind of caught between a rock and a hard place.
But the believer in me is saying, why is an inspired bishop
saying that?
Derailing you.
But he never said to break any commandments.
Right?
So
yeah, but he's derailing you from the path.
Completely. And so this is the funny thing. Okay, so I... this is what's really interesting. So this is where things came crashing. This was a period of now, within those 3 months, the most intense moments of my life. And this is to finish it off, kind of, at least to show where I'm at in my life now, to get to the present day. I walked out of the meeting like hating the guy almost. I'm thinking, this is so wrong, so wrong. But then I thought, as he said that, I thought, well, maybe this will give me a chance to talk to that boy again, my ex, boyfriend number two. He's my number one, you know, but my number two. Anyways, so I'm thinking, well, maybe I can reach out to him. I haven't talked to him in a very long time, and I did. And we took a long walk. I drove up to Utah to visit him. We didn't Nothing physical ever happened between us. In fact, he was in a relationship at the time with somebody else. But we just took this long walk, and I vented everything that I'd gone through in that year, theoretically, of going through that, if not more, and the hell it's been. And he had chosen kind of a different way, a different path of going about things. And he was happy where he was at. And for me, seeing him and seeing those feelings again just arise within me, like, I felt, it's kind of like, you know, like two turtle doves are like those, it's like that really funny YouTube video, those two like floating like otters that like hold hands and then they get separated and they float backwards and they paddle and they touch each other again. Like, I felt this connection again, and I felt like my world light again. And then I remember I had to drive home, and I didn't get to, you know, hug him or kiss him or do anything like that, obviously, for the fact that he was, you know, with somebody. And I just felt like I hated boys. I felt like I missed out. I felt like it's just too much drama to deal with. I don't want to put myself up to that hurt again. And I felt like, no, I'm going to end this. Like, I am going to find a wife. That was my decision, driving a 10-hour drive home from Utah, like I'm going to do after this interview. And I started having a panic attack. I hadn't had those in a very long time. And I started throwing up violently in about St. George, about halfway between here and home. Mm. And I was pulling over the side of it, and I haven't thrown up in 10 years. I'm vomiting everywhere. I think it's just my stomach was in knots. I was having a breakdown. You're talking about imploding, literally, physically, I was imploding, just barf everywhere. And it looked like a scene from The Exorcist. And I remember passing out on the side of a road. Kid you not. I'm behind my car, so no one would have been able to have really seen me either. And I remember waking up in my vomit thinking, I'm at a low point in my life. Like, I've hit, I don't know how far. I'm a leper now. I'm a leper. I'm in sackcloth and ashes. I've lost my farm. I've lost my family. I've lost my riches. My God is not talking to me. Like, I've lost this all now. Mind you, I'd sold my house, lost it basically, gave it up theoretically. And so I had nothing to claim. I'm a badass dancer. Right? But then again, my parents were world renowned, and they didn't really have a lot of monetary compensation at the time either. So I'm seeing this cycle. I'm seeing this perpetual nothingness happening. And I think I put a lot of my eggs in the fact that I need to find someone else to help validate the fact that I can grow with them. Not even make a lot of money at this point. I just want to have a connection with somebody. And I needed it. I needed it bad. I mean, that's when I'm starting to like talk to my dogs and have conversations with them, because I needed to do it. And, you know, my two best friends, they were, you know, married with having babies now. And I just felt stuck in this weird limbo, and I was caught in this weird place. And I go home, and a couple weeks later, I knew my answer. I'm going to marry a woman. I'd rather have a woman and not be fully 100% into her, but love her and be faithful to her and show true fidelity to my spouse and have kids and deal with that than deal with the depression of being alone. To me, I actually saw something kind of as a blessing. This is hell. I am in hell right now. This is what hell is like. And now, at least there's a little bit of like a silver lining on a dark cloud. This is better than that. And I thought it was. So I came to my bishop. I'm like, I know, Bishop, you asked me to do those things, and it actually put me here. And he's like, well, I'm surprised that you're taking it that way, but I'm not going to fight the divine. Good for you. You got a month left, or two, whatever the time frame was this after that. So I go back to church, and I had this really weird thing where we had this big church meeting, and I'm sitting down, and I'm feeling my skin's itching again. And they're talking about, how can we reach out to our less active members? And I remember, like, the bishop was like, I want you guys to say ideas. And he called all the married people there. And I was the only, you know, adult that wasn't married, because I go to a family ward. And we're all sitting in this little room, and he has a chalkboard, and he's writing ideas. And people are giving out ideas. And I'm seeing these families hold on to one another and hold hands, and husbands and wives that I've known for years that I've grown up with. And I love these people. I really do. But for some reason, something in my heart for the very first time was saying, you don't belong here. Can you really do this, Benj? And I kept fighting it, thinking, I'm so close, it's Satan. So close, it's Satan. So close, it's Satan. So close, it's Satan. So, this is where everything changes. I get a call from my bishop. He's like, you need to go to your old stake president. He needs to tell you something. It's very important. And so I drive over there, like a week later. And my stake president from that old stake says, Benji, I have to warn you about something, a new church policy.
It's a new church policy.
Yes.
That came around 2010, 2011?
11, yes.
Last year.
It was last year.
Okay.
This is like February, March?
Of 2011.
Mm-hmm. February, okay. 2011.
All right.
Maybe February, March, between those 2 months, more or less, give or take. And he said, and you can tell I walked in the room, and normally when I walk in this room, again, this is one of my favorite members of the church to this day, arguably one of my favorite members of the church. And he's fidgety. And I'm excited to see him, like, hey, I'm doing so good, I got a month or something like that left, you know, I'm doing great. And he sits there, he's like, Benji, I have to tell you something that's going to be very difficult to take. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, they're going to have to excommunicate me or something, like, two more years, no, it's so bad. And he said, there's a new church policy. I'm going to just say this right now, that remember that things are divinely put on here. And sometimes we don't understand why we have a trial, but we have to deal with it. And he's like prefacing so much. And I'm thinking, gosh, what is it? You know, I'm thinking, do I have to wear like a rainbow flag or like a name tag that's in rainbow colors now? At this point, I'm like, I don't care. Just tell me. And he says, you know, when in your church membership records, you know, when you transferred over, that it has a little asterisk that basically warns your bishop or whomever's looking at your records that you are currently going through church disciplinary action. I'm like, yeah, yeah. And he's like, you know, that usually goes away after you finish your time and you're back in active and good temple attending presence in the church. And I'm like, yeah, I get that. Yes, of course. I understand that. I can't wait till it's removed from mine. And he's like, well, you know, actually, if you admittedly had participated in any homosexual activities, that's going to stick with you for the rest of your life. And I at first I thought I'm going to be disfellowshipped for the rest of my life. Like I could only attend church. He's like, oh, no. He's like, your bishop, stake president, and whomever will know that they can never call you to positions where you're teaching youth, anyone under the age of 18. And my heart dropped. And again, one of those, I'm such like a Richard G. Scott pounding the pulpit. Like I hit the pulpit and I went, I'm like, I hit his desk and I went, what are you telling me? Like, what are you trying to say? Are you trying to say till I'm done? Like I can't be around 18 year olds. I can't go to church till I have my repentance process. Then he's like, no, he's like, this asterisk is going to be on your church membership records till the day you die. I said, okay, but what if I get married to a girl? He's like, it'll be with you to the day you die. What if I have kids? It'll be with you to the day you die. And I lost it. I thought to myself, you know, here I am bending over backwards to figure out how to make fit in this mold, this cookie cutter machinery mold that I was not made into, but I've bent myself to be there. How do I do this? And I said, how do I do this? Like, how am I, the only thing that I can look forward to right now in my life is being able to find validation in serving the church, serving the youth. There's a good possibility I might not meet a girl. There is that possibility. And I would even be willing to just fight it to the bitter end until I'm old enough that my sexual drive is gone and I'll marry a woman who's a widower and we'll get married in the temple and it's going to be awesome. Like, I even thought about that. My mom even said, maybe you'll just get married when you're 70. My mom said this. That's weird. It's weird. That's such a weird mentality. She knows that. She thinks it's weird now too. But it's defeating. It's a sentence. It's not a process. It's a sentence. And I told him, I'm like, this is not of God. Flat out. I said, this is not of God. And this is the very first time in all of my life, John, ever, my whole life, where I thought, this might not be the true church. Or maybe Thomas S. Monson is not the prophet. I loved Gordon B. Heatley at the time. I didn't know about some things that were a little controversial that he'd done in his past. But I thought it was terrible. Hmm. Absolutely terrible.
So you'd never be able to serve in primary or young
men's ministry? Never. Even I would never be able to be a scout leader to my own damn son. I looked, it sounds, maybe this is kind of gay of me, or maybe it's just good wishful thinking. I looked forward to tying my son's ties at church and watching them the first day pass the sacrament and being able to be an advisor and watch them in scouting and go on camping trips and doing these things. And here I am wearing a scarlet letter for the rest of my life. And that is not right. And that is not of God. And what about this book of life nonsense where our church records are supposed to directly reflect, the organization of this church on the earth is supposed to reflect that of above? What is that? That is not the case. That is not the God I know. That is not the atonement that I know, that I've felt before. That is not Jesus Christ's church. It is not. Plain and simple. It is bullshit. And I'm infuriated at this point. I'm thinking the hell and the love of my life that I gave up and everything that I've ever given up because I knew that I had to fight this is disturbingly all coming to a really weird halt and crash. And then he said, Benji, calm down. He's like, he gave me a lot of faith. He's like, Benji, you need to just listen to yourself right now and realize this is a trial. He's like, all you have to worry about right now is getting back to the temple. Right? And I'm like, why? He's like, because if you get back to the temple and then you go to Salt Lake and you march over and you protest this, you as an active member of the church can maybe have a strong voice in this. And I thought about that and I thought that was cool. And I thought, okay, I'll do that. I'll find solace in that. And it actually pacified me enough. He bore his testimony. We prayed together. We knelt down. I felt okay about it. But again, it was the first time that there was that door that was open to see if the coast is clear and the zombies were running towards me. It was one of those moments where like, ah, they're coming in. And now I'm running around in my protective house and all the zombies are after me. And so then, you know, things like the things that I'd studied and, you know, all the weird doctrinal studies. Now I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm seeing a pattern here. This is kind of weird, but maybe I have to follow my prophet right now. That's how I stuck with things. And I thought, but if God's the same today, yesterday, and forever, why is this policy changing? He said it's more about the lawyers of the church protecting their assets, protecting the church's integrity. Thinking what? I'm like, what? Who's suing what? Were there child molestation cases? Well, guess what? I've never done that. I'm not a child molester. Never. Never done anything inappropriate like that. Never delved into child pornography. Never did any of that. And yet, I am being held in the same light. It's like a whole... it's a whole miracle of forgiveness thing again, where we're compared to that. We're compared to murderers. Bull. Sorry, no. Not from the communities that I've seen that are actually really positive. Not from the gay friends of mine that have killed themselves because they would rather do that than fall into that category. Bull. Not going to happen. And then I thought to myself, how many boys and girls right now are on the brink of suicide? I was getting there. But how many people are that suicidal, whether taking meds or they're bipolar and manic depressants? How many of them would hear this and think, I have no hope to even serve in this church? Or those that said, I would never get married, but I can't wait to teach primary and play the piano for primary. A gay man that's musically inclined, he could share his talents right then and there and feel like he is of need to the kingdom. He will never be able to do that. How depressing. And not only that, we'll only be around married men that get to gloat and bear testimony about how amazing their lives of having an eternal family are. It is a sentence and it needs to change. So now I'm sitting back at church a couple weeks later and I'm like, I'm going to go to the temple. I'm going to have a breakthrough. It's going to be awesome. And now I'm expecting something good. And I was pacified a little bit by my bishop, but again, by my stake president, but those things kind of did creep through a little bit. And I'm sitting at church one day and I'm really close to going back to the temple. I don't know the exact timeline, but again, this is in that March time, I believe. It was April at this point. And I'm sitting down listening to a hymn during sacrament meeting. Normally I sing the hymns. I love singing. It's one of the only things that we can do as disfellowship members of the church actively in the church. We can't pray out loud, right? So I'm like, I'm going to sing and belt these hymns. And I always sit in the back overflow by myself. It depresses me being around other families. It's one of those things. I was friends with the missionaries. Oh, it says, by the way, we could never take the missionaries out for splits either. So, a lot of things, right, that I love. Missionary work, one of the biggest things of my life, one of my biggest passions. I couldn't do that one either.
Ouch.
Ouch and a half.
Yeah.
So, I don't want to sound too angry, but it did infuriate me a little bit, and it hurt me more than anything. And I'm sitting there and I'm listening to this hymn, and I decided just to pray again to see if I can get my answer now. It's at sacrament. I used to get a lot of answers to prayers through sacrament meetings. I felt peace. I felt like it was a very good time where everybody was just in the same mentality. Like, I get why people like bow at the same time in other faiths, because it is this movement of energy where our focus is in the same exact thing. So I love that about actually sacrament meetings. It's one of my favorite things, where we're all bowed in prayer, unified. Like, I love it. And I think it goes back to my family, how we used to pray like that together. And I'm sitting here listening to the hymn, and it's a rare one. And I should have looked it up before I came here, but I didn't. And it talked about grace, which is such a rare topic that we bring up in our church everyday talk. It's one of those things that we talk about, but it's so born again Christian that it seems like we'd be forgetting all of our to-do lists a little bit too much. It's okay. Grace saves us. I'm saved by Christ. I accept him, you know? But grace is really important, and it is a doctrine that is spoken of very highly in the Bible, in particular the New Testament. And I think that year we were studying the New Testament too, and Sunday school. So we were talking a lot about that, and this is being sung about grace. I'm like, this is a beautiful hymn. And then I stop and I'm praying, you know, give me an answer, Lord, please help me out here. Please let me feel peace about all this. Can I find something to do here? And I look at the corner. You know, there's always like a little reference scripture to look up. So I look up DNC 13250, which ironically was it was mentioned in a couple of podcasts.
The Grant Palmer podcast.
Which was totally spoken about completely in a different contrast.
Right.
Completely. Context, yeah. Yeah, completely. But nevertheless, this scripture really spoke out to me in that moment. You ever done like the roulette thing where you just pick a page and try and find your answer right there? Well, it was kind of like that. And I'm reading it, and it says, in a nutshell, it says, you know, I've seen you, I've forgiven you of your sins. I've seen your willingness to bend your will to the Lord and keep the commandments. For behold, lo, I provide for you an escape. And I stopped right there. I'm like, what does that mean? You know, and it hit me so profoundly. And it was the first time, John, in, I didn't even know what that was yet. I didn't even know how to materialize. What is that escape? But it hit me so hard. It was the first time I felt peace in about 5 years. Easily. Since my mission. First time I felt true peace, stillness, love. My body was relaxed. I wasn't tense. I felt like there were angels giving me, like, back rubs. That's the best way to put it, you know? And I felt like it was one of those moments where, and again, it depends on your perspective. It was either me communing with the divine, and he was a little bit closer. The veil was a little bit thinner in that moment. Or I was talking to my truest self. I could see beyond this. Maybe it was the whole 100% of the brain rather than the 10% that works. Whatever it may be, I don't care. But I had my answer. And I asked, I said, God, what do I do? You know? And I said, is it okay if I can leave? Is it okay if I can, this is my escape. If grace will be with me, have I done enough? Are you happy with what I've done? Like, are you happy with all that I've tried to do if I were to leave right now? And I felt this answer. I said, yeah, be at peace. It's okay. That's what I felt. I felt like it's okay. Just remember the things that you've learned in this. Like, I thought to myself, I need to not let this go, though. I need to not let the people of Oaxaca, my mission, the experiences that I've learned, the diligence, the hard work, the labor, the service, all those things are the most amazing lessons. The kinship that I had with a great community, building communities, that is so important. And I learned so much. And my career is in gratitude to that. Beyond my spirituality, beyond finding anything else, beyond being a better father, a better husband in the future, which I'm planning on doing that, by the way. Like, that's going to happen. And it was everything. I felt like, case closed for you, Benji. Like, quoting Babe, the movie Babe, that'll do, pig. Like, that'll do. And I felt that closure there. And I felt I mean, more so than any other testimony I've ever borne, more so than every other moment to answer to any other prayer that I've ever had in my life, more than any other moment where I felt the Holy Ghost is touching me right now, or is touching the person that I'm speaking to right now, I knew and could testify and will testify to this day that that was what God, or my innermost thought, or my inner true self, or whatever you want to call it, Heavenly Father, Heavenly Mother, whatever anyone reads into this is, that was my answer. Clear as crystal. And then one more time, okay, let me put this now into perspective. I get my answer, sacrament still being passed. Obviously I'm rejecting it, right? And I'm bawling my eyes out. My bishop kind of looked at me and he's like, he's having it. Like something's happening. Whatever it may be, he's getting it. He knew it. And I'm sitting there like this, and I'm almost like exhausted, like physically, I let it all out, you know? And I'm thinking, did this just happen? This was all worth it. Like, at least I know, you know, I can go on and be at peace and not just say, well, I'm going to leave this place because they don't accept me. That wouldn't have worked for me. I would have hated being gay, actively gay, John, and just leaving the church for no reason. Like, I needed something catastrophic, and I needed to see it apart. I was that stubborn Mormon. Like, I couldn't do it. And, so anyways, this is what the icing on the cake was. Again, divine timing. I'm sitting here, and all of a sudden, mind you, I'm sitting alone on a row, and an arm goes around me. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe someone saw me, you know, crying. This is my old family award. People know me. They just see that maybe I'm going through a bad day. And I'm just bawling 10 times as bad as this. There's snot, boogers, and ties everywhere, and my scriptures are all gross over here, and I'm just sitting there like going back and reading that scripture and then reading that hymn, and I'm thinking, this is as clear as day. What more of an answer could I ask for other than now I need to make that decision? What more answer? And instantly the thought came to mind, Lehi did this, Nephi did this, a lot of people have done this. You think about it, Lehi was a prophet, right? If we believe the Book of Mormon, the historicity, whether it's in question or not, Mormondom, active Mormons believe that Lehi left Jerusalem, he was a prophet already. He left the church, started his own, because there was a purpose behind it, a very wise purpose that only the Lord knew. I'm not saying I'm starting a church. I don't need to. I don't want to. But I'm saying there is a wise purpose, at least for me personally. And I believe that Nephi had to cut Laban's head off. He had to break the commandments that are written on table, on stone. If his church had seen him do that, they'd probably think, how did you get by this, Nephi? I bet you his brothers and sisters were like, how did you get those plates, yo? That's hardcore. That's crazy, right? But he did it because he followed the personal revelation that he got from his Heavenly Father, right? So our whole church is based off this. Our whole church is based off, for instance, that moment, Abraham raised the knife to kill, to slay Isaac, to sacrifice him on the altar. He was willing. And it wasn't until the angel stopped and said, we provide an escape for you, that he found the ram caught in the thicket. So I find it really interesting that some of the most paramount moments of our faith, of what we identify as our faith and true religion, has been based off of going against the grain of the church itself. I think it's pretty interesting.
How about Joseph and polygamy and the angel and the flaming sword? Right?
Gosh. Joseph is a perfect example of that. Brigham, even therefore, is a perfect example of that. Any prophet after that changing a policy is of that, as far as I'm concerned. Anyone that went against, again, Brigham with the whole, you know, the whole Adam God theory, they theoretically are in a weird sort of way apostatizing from what was established in that moment. Let's be honest.
It's kind of the pioneer, right?
It's a constant pioneer progression, right? If we're constantly being fed new revelation, the way the church is moving, that's the way people move. I think that my story thus far, at least up to this point, can be identified with any member of the church, active, inactive, or ex, former. I think anyone can identify with this because they've studied it in their scriptures since day one. Whether they want to believe that I was deceived by the devil or not, I'll leave it up to their judgment. I could care less. I got a thick skin now. I do want to say, however, that I think it's really interesting that in that moment, this is to top it all off. So you want an icing on the cake, anyone that wants to disbelieve this. I'm sitting here, arm goes around me, and it smells like an old lady. You know, like they have that older perfume and there's like a knit sweater. I just felt like an old bony arm around me, right? And I'm sitting there and I'm now crying in this woman's arms almost. Like, I don't even know who this is. I couldn't even open my eyes. They were so tear-filled. But after I had that whole thought about, like, you know, we've all gone through these Nephite moments, then it was this. I look up, you know, the boy sat down, sacrament was over, or the actual institution, the sacrament was done. And I look up, and now mind you, my ex, the boy, his family lives here in Utah. I'm not going to name the state, the city necessarily, but they live out here. All of them do, right? And we used to visit his grandmother quite often for Sunday dinner after church all the time. And I think she's really cool. I don't know if she knew about us or not, but she just knew that we adored each other. And she always used to ask about that. Like, you guys are just such great friends and la 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 la. And anyways, it's her. I'm in Redlands, California, in a steak center that's not off the freeway. She was on the way. I don't know what she was doing exactly, but she had some other business elsewhere and she missed her meeting and she felt like she needed to take the sacrament and go to the overflow. So here's grandma that lives here in Utah, knows me, didn't recognize me because I'm like this, puts her arm around me. She says, I just felt like maybe this young man needed a hug. Mm. Talk about awesome Mormons.
This is the grandma of your ex-boyfriend, number two.
Number two, but the number one, number two. Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah, the one that I love my life. That's what I say.
And that means to you what?
Well, I thought maybe that's another sign, too. Whether that is or not, that's TBT. Or TBD, rather. And that's for another time. But what's awesome is, what other confirmation do I need? I had the material. I had the metaphysical, spiritual enlightenment. I had the peace, fruits of the Spirit come after me. It happened during a time where I'm inside the Lord's church, during the sacrament, the most holiest of all things we can do outside of going in the temple in Mormon world.
While you're worthy.
While I'm worthy. While I'm close to going back to the temple. While I have sacrificed so much. While I was diligent in searching and fasting and reading the scriptures. Mm. And I'm thinking, there's no way that Satan could be in this room right now. Or I'm completely nuts, which could totally be the case.
But what was the message?
The message is, leave the church. You are not meant to be here right now. Go at peace. Be a good person. Remember and hold on to your true Christian ethics, because that is deeply a part of you and who you are. And that's what I'm doing now. April 27th, which is ironic because it's the day I came back from my mission just 6 years later, I wrote my letter of resignation from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm going to quote a Joanna Brooks where she says, you know, like, I claim you, and I totally claim my Mormon heritage. And I totally do. I'm Mormon. You can't remove our funeral potatoes and our green jello with carrots inside of it. You can't remove my mission. You can't take away all the people that voted for me that are LDS that have uplifted my career to where it's at today. You can't remove the moments that we prayed in supplication to the Lord, that we learned from going to church, from my babysitters taking me to church. You can't remove my history. You can't remove the people that I baptized and that I've helped inspire that are in the temple now working. You can't take those things away. And I will not allow anyone to take that away. Now, why did I resign? Well, one, I don't want it to be a witch hunt. I don't want to be the Quinn of my day. I don't want that.
The Michael Quinn.
The Michael Quinn. Yeah, the Michael Quinn of my day. I don't want that to happen. I know a lot of people actually are good staying in the church that might necessarily have a testimony, and they work because they love it. They love that. They love going to church. There's something about the familiar aspect of it. But for me, my progress stopped. I could not go any further because there was no progression left for me in that field.
Your spiritual progression.
My spiritual progression could not progress there any longer. And that day, since to that day, I have not gone back to church. And there have been times where I wanted to go to church. I really have.
Sure.
You know, just to hear the primary sing, you know, just to But I'm not ready for that right now. Not yet. And it's funny because I still have my devotionals. I probably study the scriptures and Mormon doctrine more now. And not even to like prove my position or anything like that, but I just find it fascinating. It's like a history person. And more in that sense, I find it beautiful. And it's wonderful. It's awesome. It's still rich. It's still beautiful. I still get my church experience. And it's a weird sort of way. It was kind of a blessing. I think it's kind of all made sense that I refused to fully go back to the temple, because it's not like I had the temple one day then lost it. I lost the temple for a series of a couple of years, and I think it kind of helped soften the blow. Like, it was me losing the temple, then losing my home ward, then traveling a lot, so I'm at multiple wards. I mean, it was a beautiful, gradual, almost divinely put process of me landing softly on my feet. And yeah, so that's where I'm at today. That's me and theoretically my Mormon story. And I don't think the story's done. I think there's still so much more work to be done, both for myself personally, and I think to help other people. And this is arguably one, it's because I'm lazy and I don't want to write everyone I know a personal letter about my resignation from the church. But two, I think this is a way that maybe if someone's listening to this, that someone that's going through what I'm going through, that one, there's hope on both sides of the equation. I'm not trying to tell people to leave. I'm not trying to tell people to stay, certainly. But that you'll find your answer. You can find your way.
Go to the grove.
Go to your own grove.
And, just like Joseph.
And don't feel you're unworthy to receive that. Deep down inside, somehow you'll get an answer. I really do believe that. And I'm grateful that I had to go through this gauntlet, though, too, because it's more of a sense of being so sure that I made the right decision. A prophet of God, if you were to come up to my face today and tell me, repent, I would say, I would probably do that. And not out of disrespect to him and his calling. Because my personal belief is that if there is a God, I think he'll inspire people that have followings. You know, I don't think he inspired anyone to put the cyanide in the Kool-Aid. But I do think that all these faith religions, I think if they have good intent, I think they're doing good for the most part. It's just sad that sometimes, you know, that last little residue are affected. And in this case, it's gay members of the church. And I'm greatly affected by it. But there are many, the greatest people on earth that I know are both in and out of the church, the 50-50. And I love so many members of the church, active ones. Some know about me, some don't. They might know now. And I just want to say that I love them, and that hasn't changed. And every visit, every home teacher, every missionary companion, every person I taught on my mission, I love them so much. And it's because of them, though, that I've led up to this point, and I hope that they can see that. And I know most people probably won't. I'm okay with that. But I hope that they can be in peace, that I'm not making some rash decision because I fell in love with somebody, or because...
As if that would be terrible.
At this point now, looking back, that would be a great thing. Yeah. How romantic, you know?
But you were saying it's not because of that.
It's not. I want people to know that it's the same way that I gained a testimony that I got out. No difference.
Through inspiration.
Yeah. Wherever that comes from. You know, what's funny, too, is I don't feel I've ever, like, when, at that moment, I didn't lose my testimony in the gospel. I still believed in the validity of everything. I just felt like maybe I had my Nephi moment. Now, things have changed in this last year since not attending church. It's been over a year now since recording this podcast. It's been slightly over a year and a month. And my perspective has greatly changed.
Since resigning.
Since resigning from the church.
Okay.
Which I still haven't got my confirmation back that I've actually lost it. So I might need to take care of that while I'm here in the area. So that's changed. That's evolved completely.
You went to the grove and got your answer.
Yeah. I think the scariest thing that I would warn people that do go through this or that have the asterisk thing or anyone that's thinking about leaving is we come from a place where we hold, and this is just my little bit of information that I would give, what I can offer. You've had brilliant doctors and everyone of the kind up there. And again, I count to eight and shake my butt for a living, apparently. And so all I can say is this, coming from a layman's perspective, what I have learned is this. When we hold our testimonies, being members of the church, we have these glass globes of the world. We see the continents. We see the formation of everything. We see the tectonic plates. And what I can say to everyone right now is we hold this. We hold this in our hands. And the moment we let go, even if we still believe in it, but once we leave the church, we let go of that glass globe. And what I've been doing in my process is now I'm cleaning up the floor so I don't cut myself. And I'm picking up these individual pieces now and I'm asking, do I believe in this? Does this fit now? Can I put this back together? Or have there been chunks that have gone to so much dust that this doesn't hold true anymore? And that's been my biggest quest and journey. I found complete peace. Dating life sucks outside of the church or inside of the church. That hasn't changed. And that's another story for another day, I think. But I have found moments of love and that have been wonderful with people that aren't LDS and some that are or were. And it's been great and tragic and beautiful and wonderful and real. But the one thing that I can say is the moment that I left the church, the day that I left, other than the whole me identifying what I do believe and having my friends ask me what I believe in, is I felt like for the first time in a long time, I'm not thinking about my sins in a good way. I'm thinking about being a good person, a good Christian, being proactive rather than going back to the chalkboard and seeing how many good deeds and bad deeds I have and erasing them. But the first day I got out of my car, I woke up and I went to the gym like I normally do, walked my dogs, normal day. I didn't wear my garments. That was a little interesting. And I walk up and there's this guy that I knew from high school and I just felt inspired to give him money. He looked like he needed some money. And I did. Not to say that I'm great. I'm not trying to show what I gave or this and that, but I felt inspired to do it. Another woman, later on that day, I just saw her suffering and crying. And I felt like I just striked up a conversation. Maybe she just needed someone to talk to about nothing. And she did. She's like, I just really needed that. For some reason, I feel more in tune with helping others the way I felt as I did as a missionary, kind of putting myself without the worry of the rest of the world or the rest of my church world, this world, right? And I've had the opportunity to actually be proactive in helping others. I feel more Christian now than I have since coming home from my mission.
And I think what I heard you saying is that instead of spending so much time trying to manage your sins,
which is a constant thing because we're constantly imperfect,
you're now spending your time trying to look around and see where you could bless other people's lives.
Yeah. And letting people bless me. I think that's something too, that sometimes we try and battle this with just Christ, the cross, and us. And sometimes you need your friends. I'm closer with all of my friends. You know, another thing that I kind of felt too after having left, I think I kind of held myself at a higher standard than other people. I saw myself as superior because I had the truth. They didn't. And I always felt like I had to try and sell it on them rather than be real or show my imperfections. I think pulling that pants down thing was almost in a weird sort of way me trying to reach out, me trying to leave that confinement. And it's kind of weird, but it's true. And I'm closer with my true friends. Like some people, some members of the church that I've told, some of my good friends have rejected me. And I knew that was going to happen, unfortunately. And I love them and I want to be friends with them. And I'm going to give them their time because we're too good of friends to let that destroy this. And some have grown closer with me. But all in all, it's been such a beautiful experience because now I look at everyone as community. I truthfully look at everyone as my brother and sister now. It's like brother and sister, but then brother and sister. There's a totally different vibe. And I've asked even my friends that are active LDS, I'm like, tell me right now that what has changed between us three. Do you love me any different? No. But do you see me as farther away from you? Yeah. Do you see yourself as in a superior place? Yeah. Good for you. That's tough. But that's okay, because I did that too.
Do you see yourself now in a superior place to them?
No, I don't. The only thing that I do is my heart hurts sometimes. I forget what podcast it was, but it was talking about the idea of sabbaticals.
Joanna talked about that.
Okay, yeah. And how everyone needs to, in almost all cultures, even in FACE, everyone has a sabbatical. I would love to see what would happen if they just took a day off. See where they could focus their energies. It would be very interesting. And that's the only thing, I just feel, I feel grateful. And I feel like I have a privilege to have that exposure and that experience. So I theoretically, some people might think I'm in Babylon, but I haven't been burned to ash and I haven't been turned to stone. Right. Interesting.
All right, Benji. Well, we've done 5 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know if that's a record, but we're pushing it.
Oh, man.
It's been beautiful. I guess I have some random follow-up questions and maybe some questions from the listening audience. I Facebooked this morning. I was interviewing you, and lots of people had lots of questions.
I shall have more now after this.
Yeah. Well, they're not listening, so.
Right.
But, yeah, there will be.
Yeah.
So let's just do a lightning round, because I don't want to get too deep in any question. I just want to hit some things really quickly.
Bring it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's this culture of evergreen in the church. There's the Stuart Mattis firesides.
They stop doing that.
You know, USGA, North Star.
Yeah.
You were a part of that.
Genesis. Yeah.
You were kind of a part of that. You even spoke at some firesides, right?
I did.
So there are people now considering that path. And you've already said a lot about this, but do you have any quick reflections about that whole deal?
I remember hearing, reading Circling the Wagons, and when there are some people that want to stay in the church that are gay, and that quote, I wish them well, it affected me. I thought that is evil when I first read it, when I was in deep in all those things. So I think almost anything that I'm going to say right now is not going to help inspire any of them that are thinking about going that route. All I can say is that we all have our own individual path to take. And good for them. I think, honestly, a lot of people, if they do have a testimony, if you're a true blue Mormon, right, like I am, I think a lot of those guys do go to that to find, that's like their last resort, to find something, a community that gets them so that their church experience isn't everything. Like, they can still have the Mormon experience of the gay side without hooking up in bathrooms or going online.
Although some of that happens at these.
That's another story. Yes, it does. It does happen. Yeah. It happens all the time.
I mean, that was the rumor about the Mattis firesides.
Well, that's
that people
would
hook up in the parking lots after.
It was a 50-50 thing. And you could see those in the audience that were in attendance. Normally, everyone just looked forward because it was kind of like there's a lot of anonymous BYU attendees there. I remember the first time I went, I was shaking in my boots because people knew who I was. I started signing autographs at the end, and people took pictures and Facebooked it. And then little did I know, I heard like, oh, Benji's gay. That's why he's not BYU. Like, you hear those things. It's bad. But in the end, to make a long story short, it is, in the physical sense, it's a little difficult. And so a lot of those groups like the North Star have been a bit more selective with the physical FaceTime exposure. And they keep things online to show a support community that's a little bit more controlled. And I get why they do that. I get why they do that completely. On the flip side, I'm not going to knock them at his firesides because they were one of my only glimmers of hope in a very, very, very dark time. And the Mattises are the most amazing people you will ever meet. Plain and simple.
These are the parents of a young gay Mormon man who committed suicide.
Stewart.
On the grounds of a stake center in California.
Yeah. And, you know, I know his family, and I know a lot of his friends. And I still consider them friends. I do. And I hope that they can still consider me a friend, too. Since then, unfortunately, a lot of them have kind of stopped communicating with me. Even I never even had a chance to tell them about what's going on in my life or the experience that I had. But yeah, I gave a mini testimonial talk at a fireside one time. And I was asked by Tyne Mansfield, who's written now 2 books, about staying in the church. He's married with a beautiful wife, Danielle, and they have an awesome, gorgeous daughter. And they're a great married family, and they're making it work in their own way. That's just not my way. and that's okay. That's okay.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a very neutral stance, and I respect it. I support it. My heart's there too. As a therapist, you're taught never to impose your values on people.
Right.
Yet, there are lots of young, you know, 5% of the LDS population is experiencing same-sex attraction, trying to figure out.
I'd say 10 to 14.
Yeah. Trying to figure out what they're going to do, right?
Yeah.
And so they get these workbooks and they read about Evergreen and they say,
it further messes them up.
I can do this. I can do this, right?
There's hope.
So on the one hand, we're both saying people should live the life they want to live.
Yeah.
On the other hand, there's people listening to this podcast who probably are right back where you were when you were in that dark place.
Yes.
Contemplating suicide.
And for those people, I'm saying you should leave. But, you know, I would say this in a nutshell, you know,
how do they, this is my question.
Yeah.
How does this 22-year-old return missionary who's on the precipice of either marrying that woman or thinking about celibacy or being tempted to date, you know, men,
or worse, living a double lifestyle
or lying
or tripping.
How do they make that decision? What feedback or counsel can you give and not just say, sorry, it's something where you have to decide for yourself?
Well, I think everyone does have to go through that process, unfortunately. I really do.
So there's no way to short-circuit that? Or
I mean, if you were to say, if I were to give my opinion, plain and simple, you would have to base it on what is your testimony. Are you doing this because you like the family, your family pressures you to do this? Do you have a true blue testimony? If you do, I would say go the route of trying to see if this is all going to be valued.
But you had the true blue testimony.
I did. But I'm saying that I needed to go and exercise every option before I left, before I could find peace upon leaving.
But how dangerous is that?
Totally.
I mean it.
But how dangerous is it to leave the church, or how period, if you doubt it. How dangerous to leave it just from the cultural perspective? It is totally dangerous. How dangerous is it to stay in the church and marry a woman when you're not attracted to her? I think they're both. My good friend Mark, who I dated for a while.
You're saying every path is dangerous.
Yeah, he wrote a really beautiful talk that was actually published in Affirmation. He's an active member of the church, and I love him to death. And he decides to stay for the sense that we need more gays here. He's totally gay, open about it, will never marry a girl. And he finds happiness now, as is. What he decides to choose about that, it's up to him, and he's cool with it. And he's at peace right now with it currently. I'm the guy that looks into the future. Like, I have to know what's going on. And he, in a nutshell, wrote this article saying, you know what? It is just as gut-wrenching to decide to give up the idea of an ideal, perfect love that fits the natural you. And make that work for the rest of your life. And to feel the responsibility of trying to validate a woman that you might not even be attracted to remotely, right? It is just as excruciating as leaving the faith that you truly believe in and love that has been so big a part of you. I believe both are gauntlets within themselves. And I have the utmost respect for anyone that chooses either or. Nevertheless, in the long run, if you have faith in the atonement, and if you've tried as hard as you can, I believe it's not a bad idea to think about taking a Nephi moment. Cut Laban's head, raise the knife, catch that ram in the thicket, leave your flock and build a ship. Whatever it may be, sometimes we are faced with that. I think it's the second to last paragraph in the Proclamation of the Family where it talks about, you know, all of these things are laid out before us, but nevertheless, there are individual cases that are met for adjusting. Or adaptation. And I believe that we're a part of that adaptation. And I believe that every gay member of this church should have the opportunity to love another man or another woman. I think we would have such an awesome church if we just let the gays come in. If we could just leave that all behind and clean up our act and not worry about that so much, we'd have a really amazing church.
So for that committed young Mormon who has reached the point of desperation and potential suicidality.
Those are the ones that I'm worried about more than anything. They're the ones that are the ticking time bombs.
Once they're at that breaking point, then you say,
take your sabbatical. I will say this right now, you have an escape. And it's not the end of the world. It's beautiful and it's wonderful and it's wild and it's so new and you have to reevaluate your testimony every day. but it's kind of like being born again. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating. And if I can just let anyone know that is in that moment, one, your life living now is so important. You know, we as members of the church think, you know, all is well, all is well, which I think is ironic because that's like the theme song right now for these podcasts. But I would say all is going to be well in the afterlife. And that's more of like the theme of the Mormon church right now. All is going to be well. All sucks right now, right? And I don't know of a God or a Jesus Christ. I don't know of a Jesus Christ that didn't take the time to see the kids. You know, I love in that, and it's not even doctrinally sound or anything, but I love in that Testaments movie where they show that little clip of Christ, like holding the butterfly and marveling at it. Or like eating the apple, or holding the kids. All the the most like highest selling Simon Dewey paintings are usually ones where there's like a little baby there, right? Holding a child. And I think there's something to be said about enjoying the pleasures of life. And if you can't procreate, if you're not going to be able to have that kind of a unit, there are so many kids that need adoption in this world. There are so many. I plan on having kids. I plan on having my suburban Mormon family just with a husband that's really hot. You know, that's it.
Is he a dancer?
I don't have one.
No, I mean, as you envision him.
I will never, never date a dancer again. Thank you very much. But,
all right.
Yeah.
So, have you heard of the term the queer bounce or the gay bounce?
No.
Rumspringa. It's this idea that you leave the church. It happens with ex-Mormons as much as I've heard it happening with...
That run back?
No. It's where... It's like, oh, I don't have the constraints anymore. I'm not trying to be temple worthy.
Yeah.
It's the whole gay lifestyle that people sort of...
We're showing quotations, air quotes, by the way, because that's not true gay lifestyle, but yes.
No, but I mean, yeah. Even for you...
It's
like,
a wild lifestyle.
Yeah. What? That's, yeah. It's got to be difficult to decide what your morality is going to be. And it's a scary world out there.
Yeah.
And... There are all sorts of scary, dangerous, risky, unhealthy behaviors.
Yes.
How are you going to avoid that?
Two things. Simple enough. One, I find it really interesting that almost everyone other than those that I know that have been raised in a very strict religious environment, even some that have other than the Mormon church, some of the greatest parents, heterosexual parents I've ever met in my life, like... you know, for instance, one of the close kids that I teach, their parents, I think they're the coolest people on earth. We're never really raised super religious or this and that. And they have it together. They're the most faithful couple. They're wonderful. And yet, for some reason, we were talking about, you know, what's the wildest things you've done? Oh my gosh, I did coke in college and I slept with everybody and this and that. And I just found my one true love and it was all good. And it's like, there has to be something said about sowing your wild oats. Why do you think that college age, you know, the freshman 15 is, even though in the freshman 15 you get a BYU is from eating bake sale cookies, but the freshman 15 in every other college is from drinking a lot of beer at parties. You know, but this is our future. Most of them become ambassadors. Most of them become great members of society. There has to be something said about sowing our wild oats in youth. And I don't find that to be a bad thing. I don't at all. In fact, I find it very, very healthy. It's our vision quest.
But it can end dangerously.
Especially for Mormons.
It can hurt you, right?
Especially for Mormons, most definitely. So, for instance...
If you catch a disease, you could die, you know, in an accident.
Definitely. First, that's why I always say, find restitution, then leave the church. That's what I did. So I didn't leave the church and think, whoa, party, I don't have any restraints. And it's not that. Like, it's not, I'm going to go try cocaine, and I'm going to have unprotected sex, and I'm going to do this and that. I'm going to go steal stuff, and I'm going to go burn a house.
That's not how you feel.
I'm not going to kill somebody. Yeah, because, like I said, the first feeling and effect that I had upon leaving the church was, I really want to help people. I love everybody. So I didn't become this menace to society where I can kill someone because I don't believe in hell anymore. It wasn't that. And so because I think I found restitution within my faith and in the church and in my testimony with God, whatever that may be, I was like prefacing that or adding that little asterisk, no pun intended. But because I had that, it wasn't such an extremist fall. It was a gradual descent.
There's still some adjustment, though, right?
Total.
You're probably still trying to find your way, maybe.
Totally, but it was that whole picking up the pieces again of that glass globe and asking, do I believe in a God? Do I believe in the historicity of the Bible, let alone the Book of Mormon? Do I believe in this the salvific power of Jesus Christ? Do I believe in these things?
Law of chastity, right?
Do I believe in the law of chastity?
Word of wisdom.
Do I believe in the word of wisdom? Do I believe in the restoration, the way the restoration is being preached today? Do I believe that Muslims have a good point and perspective? You ask everything. And it's kind of like, it kind of reminds me of like how Adam and Eve must have been like the Garden of Eden when they saw creation just in one day. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to have to name this. I'm going to have to see if I like this. And sometimes it's just by vision and sometimes it's by touch. But, you know, I think if you go about finding do you stay, do you not stay in a healthy way rather than in just open rebellion, it's a very healthy way to go. I never left the church just because of the Prop 8 thing. It didn't work for me. I still needed to ask questions. That was really bad. It was really, really bad, and it made me feel weird, but I never felt as if, oh, I have to now just run away and chain myself up and have, you know, lascivious sex with every person that I know. You know, that doesn't necessarily be the case. Then again, I'm not being held bound by certain laws anymore that used to affect me and used to mediate me a little bit more. But you have to find your way. But honestly, that finding your way pales in comparison to finding your path within the church, being in the position that you're in, pales in comparison. That is hell. Being on the fence is hell. Making a decision and enjoying that scenic route and taking pictures for what it is and seeing if it's good and being slow about it and not running so quickly and not running to an extreme, that's what it's about.
So are you saying that living that life in that box was more dangerous than what you're doing now?
Yes.
For your well-being?
Yes. Hands
down. Even if there's peril.
Even if there's peril, even if there's questions to be asked, even if there's unknown, because again, we live in a society of I knows. We're born and bred to do, I know that this is true. I know God lives. I know the church is true. I know, I know, I know, I know. I know nothing except for I know I made the right decision. I know I love my family. I love this podcast. I love Lamp. Like, those things you dig and you know. But other than that, no, we don't know everything. I think I've been in love since leaving the church. And I thought it was going to last forever, and it didn't. That's okay. I thought I knew. I didn't. But again, that does not hurt anywhere near as bad as what I went through in. And I think a loving God, if he does exist the way that we paint it out in the church, would not want that suffering to happen within his church.
Do you
have an eternal perspective? No. Fight it? No.
Real quickly, do you redefine the spiritual experiences you had now and say they were just your imagination or just
no,
indigestion?
Because I don't need to. I know it. Whatever they were, I take them for pivotal moments in my life. Whether it was Elohim or whether it was the Holy Ghost telling me this, or whether it was Jesus Christ himself or an angelic visitation or divine revelation or one of the gifts of the Spirit of prophecy or whatever, whether it's just my inner voice telling me or whether I had a psychotic breakdown, whatever it is, it's led me into a path of peace and prosperity in the land. And I love it. And I would encourage everyone to seek that wherever they're at, gay, straight, active, inactive, believing, non-believing, those that have had that queer bounce, apparently. I encourage them to reevaluate maybe the things they might have held dear in the church. I'm still very Mormon. That's a funny thing. And actually part of that conference talk will be about that. But, you know, I have earrings.
A tattoo or two.
Or 12. Or 13 now. I have an asterisk on the back of my neck. I figure if it's not going to be on a piece of paper anymore, I'll carry it with me to remember. And those that do have that asterisk.
What does it mean to you?
It means that I chose it for myself. And I'm still going to have a family, and I'm still going to work, whether it's through ecclesiastical endeavors, charitable services, teaching dance, whatever, having a family. I'll be able to teach with kids and work with the youth. I'll be able to deal with that. I'll be able to have those same rights and privileges that apparently were taken away from me, and that were going to be taken away from me forever.
Even with the asterisk.
Even with the asterisk on me.
Yeah.
So that piece of paper means nothing to me. this enables me.
So let's end as we always do with what you believe in now.
Okay. I like to bear my testimony. Can you just whisper in my ear and have me repeat in like a microphone
nope,
too close?
This
okay.
one's all yours. This is all yours. What shards of glass are you picking up?
Yeah, good question. I know that this life is meant to demonstrate true Christian ethics and love. I don't know if Jesus Christ is the same Jesus Christ that's painted in the New Testament or in 3 Nephi, but I like the idea of a Jesus Christ, and I like to consider myself a Christian because of that, and because I want to live my life through ethics and charity and empathy and service and fellowshipping my fellow man, whatever walk of life, whether they were whatever, a Jew or a Gentile, I don't care. To see beyond a color line, behind a sexual line, to show true equality, I think, is the Christian way. And anyone that says otherwise, to me, is very ungodly and satanic, and as far as I'm concerned. I know that families are very important, and that for some of us, choosing this side of the spectrum of the lifestyle is going to affect our families greatly. But in the end, truth trumps contrived. Truth trumps lies. And I believe in truths. I believe in true truths. And I believe in finding those truths for yourself and not just believing it by the word or mouth of others. Or because a leader tells you. You got to find them. I know that I believe, and I know that the Mormon church in general, all the Mormondom is beautiful, and it's culturally rich, and it's exciting, and it's great. And I know that my mission was meant to happen. I know that I was supposed to be a member of the church for 27 years of my life, because it's gotten me to a place of finding absolute peace where I can feel like there's an escape. And if that is atonement to me, then I love it and I embrace it. For a lot of people, that might seem a little weird because the words are not the same. But in the end, it is my spirituality in action. It is my now religion, but not religion as what we call religion now, but rather what it means truthfully in the word, to realign yourself with deity, whatever that may be. And I want to think the same way I believe in Christ. I want to think that there's a God out there that loves us, and that is love, and that loves all of us. And I think it's a very small-minded God to think that only 15 million people, most of them inactive, have it right. Let's talk about the rest of the world that are just as devout as we are, if not more. Or let's talk about, I know that I'm going to one day fall in love with somebody and share the rest of my life with him. And I know it's going to be a him. And if not, that'll be a curveball, but bring it on. And I know that I'm going to have a family. And I know that I'm going to love them and teach them to love others as well. And I think that's all I need to worry about at this point. I don't need to necessarily worry about what about the next life when I'm just dealing with today. And I think that's okay to embrace that. And I say these things in the name of... Just kidding.
Last question.
Yeah.
I know that there are people out there stuck in the same box. You've already...
There are many.
Not just same-sex attraction, but faith issues, testimony issues about the church, other just
awesome
types
conflict.
Of issues.
Yeah.
Just people get in these boxes where they feel like they have no escape.
Yeah.
I just want you to end by speaking to these people, offering them whatever encouragement or advice you want to give to them.
In the end...
if you want, speak to the camera.
Oh gosh, that's a little weird. hi. I would just say, sadly, when you live in a society that preaches we're heaven bound, you're going to have to go through hell to figure out if that's the route that you need to take. You will. And I think finishing on that note is, it's okay. You're not alone. Many of us have done this. Many of us have stayed. Many of us have left. But you have to find a place. You have to build your land. You have to Brigham Young cane in the ground and say, this is the place. Because if you don't set your stakes up, your tent will blow over. And it is the worst thing to go to and fro and just to get tossed back and forth. It is hell. I think that's what hell is. It's limbo. And there is so much beauty in this earth, whether you're a faithful member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints or the Community of Christ or none of the above. If you're an awesome agnostic or an awesome atheist, I don't think it really matters. But I think if we are to be judged, I think we're going to be judged based upon the works of what we truly believe. And that is paramount. And I wish you all the best. And I love you all. And you're not alone. So do good. Choose the right. Really right. CTRR. CTRTR. Choose a really, really, truly right. And John DeLynn, you're awesome. I want to finish by saying that. And I think you need to have another interview on Mormon Stories very soon.
Oh, of my own?
Yes.
All right, all right. Thanks, Benji.
Okay, we got 1 minute, John. So, all right. Okay.
Okay. Are we rolling? All right. So our other camera ran out of memory space, so we had to take Benji's camera and switch it to mine. I just want to thank Benji for coming on Mormon Stories. It's been beautiful. Really grateful for your story. I know it's going to help a lot of people. I want to remind everyone, please go up to mormonstories.org. Carry on the conversation there. You can ask Benji questions. He'll answer. Benji's going to be speaking at the Mormon Stories Conference in June around 15th in Salt Lake City. We hope you'll come.
Come.
Lots of great, great stuff. But mostly, Benji, thank you so much. We love you. Good luck. I want to see you with that family. And thanks for joining us on Mormon Stories. Until next time.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. Music today was provided by the Saber Rattlers. Check them out at saber-rattlers.com. The Mormon Stories logo was generously donated by StudioCase.com. Thanks for listening.
Come, come, ye saints, no toil nor labor fear, but with joy.